Happy Monday, Bucks fans, if there is such a thing, after a loss like yesterday in Atlanta, one that really just kicks you in the gut and makes you start wondering about a lot of things. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com, one of the Joes writing on the website, and this is the Monday Morning Joe podcast presented by Bill Curry Ford. Their website, BillCurryFord.com, home of the nationwide lifetime warranty for pre-owned and new vehicles. And Discount Garage Doors, DGDoors.com. Don't forget to use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code. Now, what a game. The Bucks, they keep it interesting, right? You know, they're the ugliest and most painful soap opera in the NFL. And we're all sick of it, but you do have to sort of kick back and realize what a crazy, crazy freaking team this is. I don't know if that's good or bad. I'm just exhausted from thinking about it. But there's a lot to talk about out of this game, and so much about this game was about the little things and the big things. Now, sometimes you don't see that in games, but it was really, really ran all the angles in this game. I got to say, overall, it sort of went just like I thought it would, except I thought the defense, the individual players, the talent on the defense, would make a couple of more plays that would be the difference in the game. I didn't think the defense would play well. I thought they would do just what they did, except I thought there'd be a couple more plays. We didn't get the plays. And offensively, the Bucks moved the ball up and down. A couple of mistakes by Jameis. But I thought that they could overcome the big mistake with those other mistakes, and just overall they were better. I thought they'd run the ball. Everything sort of played out except the final score. So... but, yeah, there's a lot in between there. You know, I want to go to some little things. Little things just killed the Bucks, even just late in this game, right? Let's go to the Falcons' last drive. Key throw on second down. The Bucks blitz, and Matt Ryan completes to the left side for about an 8-yard gain. And MJ Stewart is covering the nobody receiver on the left side. And if you go back and watch it, they're in a zone, but he's there. He's backing up behind the sticks. And when the guy catches the ball, not when it was thrown, not when he's closing on the ball, when the guy catches the ball, I believe if you slow it down, you'll see that Stewart is 6 or 7 yards off the receiver. When he catches it, that's just awful. And if he's playing a little bit tighter, a little bit smarter, and maybe you could say a little bit quicker, Stewart doesn't look very quick in general. I've been saying that since training camp. But if he's just playing a little less cushion when there's no reason to be giving that kind of cushion, maybe it's a 6-yard gain. And maybe it's a 59-yard field goal instead of a 57-yard field goal. And maybe they don't even attempt it. And maybe they punt. And, you know, these little things. And so, okay, the Falcons kick their 57-yard field goal. Bucks get the ball back. We see the Bucks driving down the field. Not the last play, not the play that set it up to Humphreys. The one before that, Mike Evans catches an out route. There are three defenders around him nearby. He catches an out route. You catch, you go out of bounds. That's what they're saying in the huddle. That's what Evans knows the play is. That's what he knows they run a 2-minute drill in practice all the time. And what does he do? He turns inside and runs head down into the defenders and then tries to battle to get outside, and he doesn't get out of bounds. Well, as he's going down, that costs the Bucks dearly. That costs them about 20 seconds. And you just can't do that. That's a veteran receiver. That's your, what, highest paid player, Mike Evans, on the team. You can't do that. That's a critical mistake for no reason whatsoever. None whatsoever. Okay, so the Bucks come back. They spike the ball. And then they throw it to Humphreys to the 21, I believe. And then they throw it out of bounds because they get nothing on their first shot from the 21. And then there's 7 seconds left. 7 seconds left. And Dirk Koetter rolls out the old, let's run Jameis up the middle so he can fumble it and fling it backwards to Adam Humphreys, who's or Evans, and then they'll fling it backwards to DeSean Jackson, and he'll catch it and take it to the house. If that's not the dumbest play call I've seen in a long time, one that you could really say was a play call, right? Sometimes you don't know exactly or who checks what, or, you know, it's not as clear. But the last play of the game, that's a decision by the head coach, and I can't believe it. Because Dirk Cutter, we hear this guy all the time tell us about percentages on certain plays. And he's no slave to stats. He's not an analytics guy, but he does rely on them in certain circumstances. And he's trying to say to the media, with AKA the fans after the game, that, and when I say AKA the fans, meaning the media is the connection to the fans, that there aren't many plays in your playbook for from the 20-yard line on the last play of the game. Well, of course there aren't, but that's why you're paying Evans and O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate and Chris Godwin, who's a big receiver, not as big as those guys, but he's got great leaping ability. That's why you're paying those guys to go up and get a ball. That's why you're paying them. That's why the Glazers are shelling out the cash. That's why you've got the number one pick quarterback to make these plays. We see them pretty much every week in the NFL. A team, you know, scores a touchdown at the end or at the half. How many of those do we see? 12 a year in the NFL? How many times do you see the quarterback running up the gut and playing fling along to score a touchdown? Not very often. Not very often at all. And for Dirk Cutter to make that decision there, I just don't get it. I think that's almost close to that's a red flag, you know, put it in the firing bank for Team Glazer as they eventually consider Cutter's future. That's just a terrible call. And I'd never want to hear from Cutter again about numbers and percentages and going on fourth down and deferring kicks and all this stuff. If you can roll out the high school trick play like that at the 20, wasn't even the 30 or the 40 or the 45. Crazy. And I understand that plays specifically is not going to be something you do from the 40 or 50, but who knows? Either way, it's nuts. Maybe you draw a penalty. And you know what? With 7 seconds left, you still should have time for a quick out to get 8 yards closer and have some more options from the 12 or 13. Now, I understand not doing that, but still, 7 seconds is a long time. These guys practice that. And they have plays, and they've got DeSean Jackson, who's going to get that cushion. And you know the Falcons would have given them another 8 yards easy on the corners, so just might as well just take it. But I didn't like it, and it was a crappy ending to a crappy game. But those little things, like the Stewart tackle and Mike Evans not getting out of bounds, come on, man. It's just not a well-coached football team on any real level right now. They're doing a lot of great things. They're scoring points. And I'm not, you know, ripping the whole coaching staff, but the little things, man, it's just really frustrating. And of course, at Joe Bucks Fan, we're Bucks fans. That's why we started this website, writing for nobody for at least a year, every day, just like you enjoy now, because we were fans, not because we thought we'd make millions of dollars here at JoeBucksFan.com. Now, Bill Curry Ford, it's important. Get there. Sean Sullivan, he's the new general manager. He is a hardcore Bucks fan, a lifetime Bucks fan, a Tampa guy through and through. And it's just only fitting that he is the new GM at Bill Curry Ford, where they've been serving the Tampa community in many ways, many charitable ways as well, for 58 years, just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. Bill Curry Ford, you get $500 off any price you find online on their website, where you already have transparent pricing, just for mentioning Joe Bucks Fan or that you're a stick carrier or you like the podcast. Just that simple. Find general manager Sean Sullivan. Tell him you want the Joe Bucks Fan discount. Poof, $500 off their transparent pricing. But the most exciting thing is the nationwide lifetime warranty, new and pre-owned vehicles at Bill Curry Ford. Go to their website, BillCurryFord.com, or find the ad at JoeBucksFan.com and click on through. Bill Curry Ford. And our other sponsor, Discount Garage Doors. I'll talk more about them later. But man, if you have any repair that you might need, same day free service call, free diagnosis. You'll get them out right to your place, your house. They'll check it out. They'll tell you what you need. They can fix it there, or you can get a new door or whatever you want. But it's free to come out and tell you in detail what you need. They've been doing this for 20 years. They serve across Florida, great local company. We've had many listeners to the podcast use their service. I've gotten a lot of great feedback. DGDoors.com. Use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code. Check them out or give them a call, really, anytime. 1-866-420-DOOR. 866-420-DOOR. Look, call them up. They'll get out there tomorrow. Maybe get out there this evening and get it going for you. Emergency service as well. Discount garage doors. All right, I'm not going all negative in the podcast. There were some good things going on, but we are all, for the most part, feeling negative. Three-game losing streak. Worst defense in the history of the NFL. And there's a lot of good going on, a lot of bad going on. I just want to say probably the biggest thing troubling me from the defense. Now, we already know that Mike Smith sucks. We already know that Joe Bucks Fan has called for him to be fired. We did that halftime of the Chicago game. First time we ever called to dump a coach. And the coaching stinks. But the talent, there's enough talent there to make plays in each game that can help overcome issues on the whole defense. And you see this in any sport. When a team is talented and the Bucks defense has talent, they make some plays. The individual talent rises up here and there to change a game, impact a game. And we're just not seeing that. And I don't really understand that at all. I really don't. Now, the Bucks are last in the NFL in passes defensed. Last. So think about that when you think about guys covering guys and making plays. They are last in the NFL in interceptions with one. That's just two examples there of just certain things are not happening. Outside of Jason Pierre-Paul, no sacks. I mean, that I say that figuratively, but they're not pressuring the quarterback outside of Pierre-Paul. And I know there's lots of factors and quick throws and guys open. It all works together. There just are not enough plays happening. No turnovers yesterday. You're not going to beat a lot of teams in the NFL without forcing a turnover. That's the part that probably scares me the most. The lack of individual stuff rising up to make a difference, just not happening. Now, Mike Smith, unprepared. I wrote today on the website that, you know, there's still time to fire Mike Smith. And I'm almost glad I got to write that, not because I wanted him fired, but it's just a wonderful way to sort of put out there that, hey, you know, as fans and as media, stuff is changing all the time. Just because somebody writes something on opening day doesn't mean that they have to stick to it for the whole year or for 2 months or even 2 weeks. Things change. Evaluations change, opinions change, reality changes, the soap opera changes, the effort changes, it all changes. And Dirk Cutter told us 2 weeks ago, no way you fire Mike Smith because, hey, then what? What are we going to do next? Can't blame one guy. Well, you know what? It's a new week for me. And even though Dirk said it 2 weeks ago, I don't think that lasts forever. I think Mike Smith could be gone this week. I don't think it will happen, but it certainly could. And, hey, if Team Glazer gets to a point where they realize, look, this guy is terrible and we have nothing to gain by keeping him, let's learn more about what we have with a fresh face. I don't rule it out, and there's still time to fire Mike Smith, still time to salvage this season with an explosive offense that has the power to rack up 30 points a game. And that's going to win you a lot of games. We don't feel it now, but if they continue to play offense like this, they're going to beat their share of teams. But again, that goes back to you need some plays on the defense. They're not getting enough. And we're sitting here, you know, I find myself in the second half yesterday celebrating defensive effort, celebrating getting off the field, all the stuff like normal teams take for granted. And it's just gotten a little twisted here with the Bucks. But, you know, Chuck Pagano was cut his teeth in coaching as a secondary coach. And, you know, he had an excellent run with the Colts until that fell apart. He was in here in training camp visiting Dirk Cutter, longtime friend. Cutter wouldn't say what he was doing. Cutter's got friends in the business. So does Mike Smith. You know, I think it's on these guys to get on the freaking phone and call in for some help, for some fresh set of eyes on this defense. Because it's not working. It just ain't working. And to just do nothing and keep going after it when you're really on pace for the most points allowed, highest quarterback percentage completion rate allowed by a mile, your last in turnover, last in interceptions, passes defensed. I mean, okay, you're playing the run pretty well. That doesn't say much when you're getting torched left and right. If they don't bring in any help here and they don't really make any significant changes, I don't see any changes really on the field. Maybe they feel they don't have the depth. I don't know, but it's so bad, and it's the dirt cutter defense right now. It's not the Mike Smith defense. It's the dirt cutter defense because he's the one allowing this to go on as in its current form, and it's really disgraceful. It's really disgraceful. Next week, next Sunday against the Browns, you can't lose that game. It's just that simple. You lose that game, Team Glazer gets together or they're sitting in their luxury box and starts talking about, okay, November 1st, we need a coaching search plan in place. Who's going to direct it? Blah, blah, blah. As many of you know, I get to go to the owners' meetings, NFL owners' meetings, and have met with Team Glazer the last 3 or 4 years. And in addition to meeting with them for the website On the Record, I've gotten to talk to them privately at the huge owners' meeting bash that is held. It's sort of the weirdest night in NFL circles where you have the commissioner, owners, wives, general managers, head coaches, and select media. They're all swirling around this big party. And a lot of alcohol, a lot of food, a lot of quite a scene, at least one that for me, because I don't attend things like that very often. And but what I can say, the reason I mention that is because I can tell you with certainty that Team Glazer was very optimistic and very upbeat and with very high expectations going into this season. If you listen to the Ira Kaufman podcast, Ira just talked about running into Brian Glazer last week and very positive. Very positive about Sunday's game and for this season. And to lose at home to the Browns, that is a benchmark that just cannot happen as it relates to the organization and the way they view this regime. Just can't happen. Too much parity in the NFL. Too much time invested into this coaching staff. Third year under Dirk Cutter. Third year with Mike Smith. Fourth year in the offense. The Bucs are getting the offense that was envisioned. They're getting that. But the defense is so bad, it can't be ignored, and you got to win. You got to be winners, and I just need to put it out there that a loss on Sunday is near devastation for the team as we know it right now. A little more on the defense yesterday. Vita Vea, I was disappointed. I really thought that he was going to sort of break out after his first game. Not take over the game or anything, but I thought we'd see more from him individually. It didn't happen. Now, Atlanta has one of the highest paid offensive lines in the game. A lot of talent there. Alex Mack, Pro Bowl center. But still, wanted to see more from Vea. Just didn't happen. Jason Light was on Buccaneers Radio Network prior to the game, as he usually is, for a quick interview. And he talked about how Vea responded well. You know, he wasn't like super upbeat that Vea's going to take over the world this Sunday against Atlanta, but he did make the point that, you know, when a guy comes back from injury and he's been out so long, usually he's tentative until he gains confidence in the injured area. And against the Bears, that was Vea's first action against real NFL opposition, period. So Light said, you know, Vea gained confidence. He had the bye week. He's in great shape and they're expecting big things going forward, that sort of thing. But I didn't see it. I thought Vea, I got to watch it again. I've watched it twice already, but I thought Vea didn't look as good as he did the week before. And his get-off isn't looking very impressive. So worth monitoring, worth watching. It's just one thing, but I was really disappointed in him on an individual level. You know, of course, there are a lot of fingers to point when the defense is this bad. But as the first-round pick, as a guy who's important, as a guy we're monitoring, was not happening yesterday. Happier thoughts. Let's think about the offense. The high-flying Buccaneers offense, most yards in the NFL per game. I believe they're still there, even after last night's wild one with the Patriots and the Chiefs. And the Bucs are, their running game came back. Peyton Barber showed up. He's now has 3 runs of 20 yards plus this season in limited action. Last year, the Bucs had 5. So, hey, Barber's coming back. He looks powerful. I don't understand why they don't run him downhill more often. These stretch plays don't work. They get the ball to the 2-yard line. They can't go over the top to Peyton Barber. They got to run him left. And of course, somebody got blown up toward, they run him toward the left a little bit. Somebody got blown up. And then that eventually we saw the Jameis interception. But, you know, Jameis obviously was the story of yesterday. First start back. And how did he do? Well, I threw out a poll on Joe Buxton. I never do this, but I wanted to ask people to grade his performance first start of 2018, mostly to illustrate that there really aren't that many Jameis haters out there percentage-wise, because obviously he played at least okay, at least 4 touchdowns, 400 yards, high completion rate, made a couple of mistakes. Every quarterback does for the most part, but I thought it looked pretty nice. On the numbers, you had 56% of people, as I read the results right now with 1,000 people just in a couple hours this morning, 56, 57% give him an A or a B. 29% give him a C, which is, you know, average. You didn't win, and you played okay. You did what we expected you to do, kind of thing, like a passing grade. Only 15% gave him a D or an F. And I think that illustrates that while it's a loud minority out there who can't stand Jameis, cooler heads prevail with Bucs fans. They understand that the quarterback didn't lose them the game. It's a lot of factors. And sure, Jameis throwing a couple of picks, not very good luck, balls he'd like to have back. That happens. It happens. Quarterbacks throw interceptions. I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying that Jameis is not to blame as a lone wolf. This guy sucks. He can't hack it in the NFL. He's not our guy. And all the stuff you hear from the haters. It's just not fair. And it's not somebody who's sitting back and is watching the film. Doesn't mean he doesn't make mistakes. It doesn't mean that he is more than a slightly above average quarterback by NFL starter standards. But he's not the problem. And a lot of good things happened yesterday. O.J. Howard, I thought, was fantastic coming back from a knee injury, a fast healer, which bodes well for his future. A lot of guys, you can sort of find out early how quickly they're going to come back from being banged up and hurt. And when Howard got hurt early this year, my mind immediately went back to last season when he ended on injured reserve. Because that's the reality of the NFL. Some guys are prone to getting banged up all the time, missing a few games a year. And here was Howard coming back from a knee injury, and thanks to the bye week, didn't miss any time when it was reported he might miss a game or two. I was impressed with that, and he looked tough and strong, and he continues to get open and be a huge force. I think they need to use him more going forward, but there are so many guys to use. DeSean Jackson, we saw the disconnection with him and Jameis. There's no blame there. I know people love to throw blame around. Oh, Jackson didn't lay out for this and this and that. Don't waste all your energy on that stuff. Jackson's an excellent receiver. He's averaging 100 yards receiving a game. There's a lot he can do. Jameis is a good quarterback. For whatever reason, they're not the connection that we all hoped. That's the reality. You can blame whatever you want, but you can't explain certain types of chemistry. It's not there. And now the question is, how do the Bucs handle that? Do they keep pretending that it is there and just keep doing what they're doing and hope it happens? I don't know how smart that is when you have all these other weapons and all these other guys that Jameis does have a better chemistry with. But that's for them to figure out going forward. I'm not going to quibble with a team that's putting up 30 points a game. However, it's not good enough because the defense is so damn bad. So that's the quandary Jameis finds himself in as far as people evaluating him in the fan base. They're going to call him a loser, even if he continues to lose games 35-30. Jameis, you're a loser. That's what they're going to say. Loser, loser, loser. He sucks. It's not fair, but quarterbacks also get a lot of credit for wins that they don't deserve. It's a team game. I'm not going to throw a bunch of cliches out of you. I'm just happy that Jameis came back, played well, stayed composed when he got drilled out of bounds, stayed composed largely otherwise, didn't fumble. You know, that's a big deal. Now, they didn't hit him too much, didn't fumble, And, you know, the interceptions came. If they continue to come, you can't throw two picks a game. And, of course, he threw two interceptions in Chicago. But all in all, I was very pleased with Jameis. And I think I'm being objective there. I really do. The offensive line, you know, if you just watch it, I wrote about this yesterday. You know, especially it was more glaring because you got Jameis playing and fighting and battling in the pocket and around the pocket, and you got offensive linemen standing and watching. That is the reality, and that can't be done. And I don't know what the fix is for that, for Donovan Smith. On the one play where Jameis is scrambling to the right, and when he did take that shot and Ryan Jensen was there to sort of issue some on-field justice for that, you know, and getting the, you know, start the scrum going. If you pause that tape while Jameis is scrambling to the right, Ali Marpet and Donovan Smith are standing still next to each other, like they're watching TV, or they're standing at the bar waiting for their beer. That's a better analogy. And these guys stand around a lot. Too much, especially Donovan Smith, just play to the whistle. It's so fundamental. I don't get it. The only thing that's going to change that is if these guys start getting benched. Hey, you didn't play to the whistle, you're not starting next game. Hey, you know, what was that? You're coming out. It's not going to work unless you have some accountability. And I don't know if Dirk Cutter's willing to do that. One way that what I thought was interesting on the accountability front, on the last drive of the game, the right guard chosen is Evan Smith, not Caleb Benenock. So the game on the line, 1 2-minute offense, 4-minute offense, whatever you want to call it. It's really the 2-minute offense there. It's Evan Smith over Benenock. Now, I understand that Benenock isn't a very good pass blocker, but he really hasn't been a good run blocker either. Guy's getting eaten up. It's, you know, something's got to change there. Is Kappa that bad? Could we see Alex Kappa? Could they make a change and give him a shot? I mean, if he's nasty and plays to the whistle and all these things that they said about him coming out of college, unless he's not strong enough, he should be better than Benenock. It's a problem. It's a problem. But all in all, the offense, look, they pass block. Jameis is back there, and they are winging it around. And it's exciting. It's fun to see. They came out fast. Very impressed. And that was really Jameis's biggest struggle coming into, you know, this season, figuring out how to start fast. The opening drive, move it down the field. Boom, Cameron Brate, touchdown. Very impressed. Very happy for Jameis, and I hope that Dirk Cutter looks at that and says, you know what? Maybe we'll take the ball more often. Maybe our offense is that good. Maybe we can benefit from these 7-0 leads. And if our defense only ever sucks it up in the second half, maybe we're better off keeping the kickoff if we get a chance and taking the ball first. I hope that's the end result there. But Barber, I was very pleased. Ronald Jones, 1 carry. I don't know how he's going to develop with 1 carry, but you know, you watch Sony Michel and Kerryon Johnson and other backs. Not a good pick right now for Jason Light. That's just the cold reality. And we're going to see against Cleveland, Carlos Hyde run the ball, run very hard, go attack this defense. And the Browns have a lot of talent on the O-line, a lot of talent on the D-line. Rookie quarterback, very inconsistent team, but they've played very well. The Bucs, this is some weird matchups for the Bucs. And without Gerald McCoy, and if Vea isn't necessarily ready yet, it's going to be a unique situation to see how they stack up in that interior line. I would guess that the Browns just right now are just going to try to run it right up the gut and see if they can be successful there. Add Nick Chubb of the Browns to that list of rookie running backs performing. I think he had an 18 or 20-yard run yesterday. He had one huge game earlier this year. He hasn't got a lot of carries, gotten many carries at all this year, but I think the Browns attack the Bucs without Gerald McCoy, who was in a boot, and that always means you miss a game, usually 3, but we'll get an official report either later today or most likely on Wednesday. I think they will do whatever they can to attack the Bucs up the gut and see if they can run the ball to take the pressure off Mayfield. It's a standard protocol kind of thing, right, with a young quarterback. However, any offensive coordinator is going to be drooling looking at the Bucs secondary and the opportunities that he's going to see on film. But I still think they try to control the ball. They still will look at Mayfield as a guy that they're not going to just ready to open up and let loose on the Bucks secondary. I think they'll play a little bit more conservative, mostly because of that McCoy injury. Because if he's not there, even though you may not be in McCoy's camp, most offensive coordinators in the league are. And if you watch what Will Golston and the guy who's not here anymore, Jarrell Worthy, put out there, you know, you might be very excited by the prospect of facing the Bucks without Gerald McCoy and some of his what his replacements might look like. But I think the nice thing about this game should be that Mayfield will make enough mistakes, not be the Matt Ryan or the Drew Brees who's been able to outscore the Bucks, the mighty Bucks offense, and that should go well for Tampa Bay. But it's too early for me to predict. It really is. I got to see who's playing and what might have come out of this thing. And I'm still shaken by last week. I'll give my prediction later this week on the Ira Kaufman podcast on Thursday, or maybe we'll even do a special one of these as a game preview. We talked about that before. Maybe we'll do one for this weekend. The podcast, iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, those are the national platforms. You could subscribe and get a free alert. The other podcasts from Joe Bucks Fan, definitely enjoy those. Also, presented by Bill Curry Ford, you've got The Free Stretch every Thursday with Bobby Fenton. Fantastic. Joe Bolts Fan every Friday with Tom Lang. Just a note, Tom Lang, there was no podcast last Friday. We're going to double up either this week, probably next week, to have two of them. Tom is a local guy from Clearwater, very close with the Lightning growing up, was a fan since day one, had family that worked for the organization. But he's based in ESPN Tallahassee right now as the boss up there. And our wishes go out to everybody in the panhandle after what happened there with Hurricane Michael. Tom Lang was affected. They lost power. The station, though, you know, he not only did he have his personal stuff to deal with, but getting the station back online and all that. He'll be back on Friday with Joe Bolts Fan and our best wishes to him. But, of course, Bucks Uncensored with the commish. And Ira Kaufman podcast, we keep them coming at you. You can subscribe to all of them, and we appreciate the support for all of them. And for all our sponsors, of course, for this podcast, Bill Curry Ford, home of the nationwide lifetime warranty for used and new vehicles. Get the details from General Manager Sean Sullivan, and of course, Discount Garage Doors, dgdoors.com, 24/7, same day, free service call, 1-866-420-DOOR is the phone number. Further on the positive side, the energy is so good on the offensive side of the ball. So good. And even some of the stuff I'm gleaning from the locker room, Lee DeCamper was out there, and things I've seen, I think it's going to continue. And that's going to just mean more W's. As we talked earlier in the podcast, you know, this team right now is kind of what we thought they would be, and that's not good, which is a team that would put up points, that would use the weapons, and didn't do enough in the offseason to fix the secondary and is relying on bad coaching. And these were themes of Joe Bucks Fan all offseason, and here we are. High-powered offense, bad coaching, not enough talent in the secondary, and away we go. But I don't know. I lean toward the optimist side, because that's how I enjoy football. When my team plays, I want them to win. I'm the guy who's a believer in the second half, in the third quarter, who is the guy who thinks they can come back. That's just me. I don't like negativity during a game, because that's not why I'm watching the game, to get all pissed off and predict a loss in the second quarter. It's just not my style of watching any sport. I'm the guy watching a basketball game. There's 7 minutes left to play. Your team's down by 14. All right, I got the vision in my head of how this comeback's going to go. So I'm upbeat because they're not out of it yet. And there's also a lot of teams in the NFL that I watch a lot of NFL. I don't watch a lot of college football on a personal level. I'd rather watch the NFL games. A, it helps me in my fantasy league, which I am one loss this season in the Joe Bucks Fan League. Thank you very much. But I just prefer it. And there's so much inconsistency in the league and so many teams that are making mistakes like the Bucks are making every week that, you know, I feel like good things can happen. However, watching all that NFL also lets me know how poorly coached this team is and how much talent they have that they're squandering. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. We got to straighten this team out, Bucks fans. I say we just as a group, as a collective. There's enough talent here to win some games and to put together a decent season and salvage this mess. But you can't lose four in a row, which is what next week would mean, and then head up to Carolina and the Saints. And maybe if you pull that out or you split there, you go 3-5. And here you are at another crappy opening to a season. If you go 3-5 from here, you just open 3 years in a row, Dirt Cutter, 3-5, 2-6, 3-5. That's too much for me. That is too much for me. The Bucks need to turn it around immediately. Otherwise, what the hell are we doing with this group? We got to start over again, as painful as that might be. But, and I'm not talking about Jameis when I say start over again, calm down. I'm talking about the regime. All right. Hey, hang in there. I know these Mondays are tough. I didn't want to do the podcast today, even though I got a lot in my head, a lot I'm thinking about. Keep visiting joebucksfan.com. Keep hanging in there. Don't give up. Don't start looking at draft picks yet. Don't buy into the haters on all the commentary. Just take a deep breath and realize that this team can win next week. Things can change and turn in the NFL. We saw it in 2016. I'm not asking you to believe in Mike Smith, and I'm hoping that they make some changes. I'm hoping they either fire him or change his role or get some help in here with some assistance from the outside. But hope's not dead yet. I'll tell you when it is, believe me. And I'll see you next week.